Hello, Phil Spencer here. Welcome to Mortgage Insider from Barclays, the podcast series for mortgage brokers. I'm a sometime property expert and TV presenter, and every fortnight I'll use my experience to get to the heart of the biggest issues in the industry. I'll be joined by industry leaders, brokers, and indeed Barclays' own experts who'll share their insights and expertise to help you navigate the challenges, changes, and the opportunities in the world of property. The buy-to-let segment of the housing market has certainly undergone huge changes in recent years. Not only is there the stamp duty surcharge on second home purchases, there's also all rental income from buy-to-let properties now being taxed for individuals who are higher rate taxpayers. So it's prompted some rethinking on the part of both landlords and brokers. There's been a big rise in landlords setting up limited companies for rental properties. Apparently nearly three quarters bought through this route last year. There's also the Renters Reform Bill on the horizon. And to talk more about it all, I'm joined today on the pod by broker Emily Mays. Emily's the founder of The Mortgage Stuff and is based in Cheltenham and London. And also by Gina Peters, a partner and head of landlord and tenant law at Dutton Gregory Solicitors. And just to point out, we recorded this episode on the 22nd of November. Great to see you both. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Should we just kick things off with a brief perspective from you both on the buy-to-let market as it currently stands? Because it's gone through a lot of change the last few years, hasn't it? Where are we at today, would you say? Just a synopsis.
It certainly is a tough market to be in for investors, for sure. I think gone are the days of an easy investment where you just put down a 25% deposit and everything else is kind of sorted out for you. There's a lot more thought that needs to go in behind the process now to make it an investment that's worthwhile.
People have got to be much more strategic than they have in the past.
They do. They really need to think outside of the box a lot of the time now, not just going down the standard AST routes, thinking of HMOs, holiday lets, doing it through a limited company. So there's a lot to think about in today's market.
Gina, how are you seeing things from the legal side?
Well, this used to be an area where you could guarantee that investors were taking up plenty of mortgages, shall we say.
Yeah.
And suddenly the brakes have gone on. And it seems like a perfect storm has been created a little bit in terms of whether or not landlords are going to invest. Mm. Those in it for the longer term, the true investors, realise that property still is a great bet. It's a great investment and it will generally provide a good yield on it.
If you're in it for the long term.
If you're in it for the longer term. And
but are you seeing new investors? Are there new investors coming to the market?
I wouldn't say so many, no. And the stats are the same.
My business levels for the buy-to-let side of things has definitely dropped, but it's not non-existent. Okay. But I think I agree with what Gina said. It's more so suiting those that are in it for the longer game, not the immediate fast return on income.
Sure. How about, are there previously invested people getting out of it? Are you seeing it in reverse?
It's not easy. It's not an easy decision because those who have used property as a pension portfolio are starting to really struggle with knowing whether or not to get out now or whether to pass the property to their children because it's just not going to give the yield that they wanted. So that's been a difficult decision to be made, particularly with the changes that are happening.
I think also, if you look at stats, the number of buy-to-let investors have dropped continuously since, I think, 2016. But what you do find when you look into those stats more deeply is a lot of those landlords are older landlords that would have probably been retiring regardless of where the market is now because they are hitting that stage in which they want to sell up and fund retirement.
So thinking back through that, probably when, I don't know, I'm guessing here, but buy-to-let probably started about 30 years ago, didn't it? Something like that. And a lot of people who got into the market at that time, as you say, they're now approaching the retirement. So the investment's done its job. It's now provided for retirement. But one of the big recent changes is the rise in owning a property through a limited company. And that was what I really wanted to talk to you both about. Let's just chat through, if we could, the main advantages as well as the disadvantages. I hear a lot about the disadvantages and the costs and associated sort of admin that goes with it. But bearing in mind who our audience is as mortgage brokers, what do they need to know about it? And what should they be discussing with their clients?
So the biggest one that is the most well known is the tax relief, better tax relief with it being a limited company, because you can still use your mortgage interest as an expense, which can help with more profitability. So that's the one that everybody tends to know.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other areas that I feel maybe aren't discussed enough. Mm-hmm. One being, again, for those investors that are in it for the longer game, if they are planning to pass their portfolio down to children, it can help with their inheritance tax liability being reduced because it's held under a limited company rather than their own personal estate. So again, that's more suited for those in it for the for the longer term. And then the other one is when you do have a do it through a limited company, if you have another trading limited company that you're a director of, you can do something called an intercompany loan, which is when you buy a new property, rather than taking your deposit out of the trading business and paying the dividend tax on it, you do an intercompany loan between that and your limited company that you set up to buy property.
Okay.
So it's a really tax-efficient way for those that do fit into that bracket to reinvest.
I mean, people need advice at the end of the day,
absolutely,
because there's a lot to consider. Is there a particular sort of point or scale at which point, at which time it makes more sense?
So higher rate taxpayers, there's always a conversation to be had for them to consider going down the limited company buy-to-let route.
Yeah.
Just for the way it's taxed, obviously 40% on personal income, whereas you've got corporation tax on the limited company, which is lower. And going back to that first point, they can deduct the mortgage interest. So higher rate taxpayers, absolutely. Those that also, if you're a basic rate taxpayer, but your longer term game is to build a portfolio, it might be worthwhile doing the limited company from day dot.
Yes.
Even though it might not benefit you now, it probably will later on in the future if you're getting a good enough return on those properties.
And have you had any or many clients already invested and transferring their investments into a company and therefore incurring all the stamp duty hit.
So whilst it's a conversation that's always had, I don't think a lot of people realise the stamp duty hit that comes along with that.
Yeah.
So as soon as you mention, they're out. So this is why I say it's really important for brokers to have that conversation early on about what the longer term game is.
Got it.
Yeah, we have lots of inquiries about this. But the one thing that I can add to the conversation is that the limited company is no different in terms of the legal requirements and the compliance issues relating to lettings and purchase of a buy-to-let property.
Yeah.
So, you're not going to be gaining anything. You're not going to be avoiding legislation by becoming a limited company, but you are certainly going to have some tax relief.
How about the disadvantages of investing via a limited company?
Again, number one point that everybody seems to know is the fact that it comes with higher mortgage interest rates. Your list of lenders is limited, so not every buy-to-let lender is going to lend to you as a limited company.
You can do it; it's just less choice.
You can do it; it's not impossible, and there's a good appetite and a good market there for it.
Okay.
It's just you're dealing with a smaller pool of lenders.
Similar rates. Or just as
higher
rates as well.
Higher interest rates, usually higher fees, and usually a more difficult application process.
Okay. You're not selling it to me.
No, this is the disadvantage still. That's it.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's the higher risk element, isn't it?
Yeah,
from a company, because you don't know what assets it's got as such. And if you're simply setting it up from the start, then there are no assets.
Okay.
So that's a higher risk.
So actually the lender has no real recourse.
No, potentially not.
I understand.
In those first early stages.
Yeah.
I do hope, though, that as years go on and this becomes more and more popular, which I'm confident it will, that pool of lenders will expand.
I suppose it's all quite fresh at the moment, isn't it?
Exactly.
And everyone's seeing how it goes. I presume there are higher admin costs and legal costs of actually running an enterprise.
Yeah, so you need to count in things like accountancy fees to keep your books going because you are a limited company.
Yeah.
Product fees on the mortgages do tend to differ slightly to your mainstream buy-to-let, mm-hmm. so an increase there too.
And just one other question on that topic. How about taking money out of a company? If you've made some profits and you want to take them, you pay yourself a dividend? Is that the way?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
You can do that. Obviously, standard tax implications for that dividend still comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I kind of touched on earlier, you can build up profit within the business and reinvest that into another property. And get tax advice on how to do that with an intercompany loan.
So it's not for the faint-hearted. It's for people who are doing it seriously and want to carry on doing it and have probably built up a few. But actually, for them, it's really good news.
It is, yeah. And I do think that the standard landlord now, in comparison to the standard landlord, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, they're two completely different people. I think that there's more of an expectation for it to be a more difficult process now than it was back then, because things are just generally more difficult.
Back then when we had free money.
Yeah.
It was really easy. In fact, we had 110% mortgages, so it was even better than that.
Nice and easy.
Yeah, and a market that probably climbed 10 or 20% a year. It was fairly easy pickings, but...
It feels as if everything's against landlords at the moment. I do really feel for that market. They've got a lot against them.
Yeah. But they provide such an important job in society.
Really do.
And an increasingly important job, just because... The levels of rent and government housing, or lack of.
Lack of, yeah, definitely.
But that's a topic for another day. Gina, can I come to you? Are there any other legal structures that landlords are exploring to own their properties? Are they thinking outside the box?
They certainly are looking at short-term lets and whether holiday lets are a viable alternative. But again, the tax implications for that are not necessarily stacking up in their favour.
Okay.
So it's all exploratory. We are getting a lot more landlords who are limited companies already. So they've already been down that process and realised that there are tax savings there. The other area, actually, and this is one which is not regulated at the moment, it's called rent to rent. And that is causing some big headaches in and around letting, but landlords are literally handing their property over to a company usually, and then they effectively relinquish their control over that property by allowing the company to sublet it in whichever way they wish.
I'm a landlord, and actually one of my properties is via that kind of a structure.
And it can be brilliant, and there are actually agencies who work with that particular model and very successfully too.
Yeah.
But you need that confidence in who you are handing it over to.
Yeah, 100%.
For compliance purposes.
Yes. Renters Reform Bill. I don't know where we are at the moment, but there's been a big focus on the no-fault evictions being scrapped, but there's a lot more to it than that, isn't there? Can you give us just an overview of the bill? And I know it hasn't all come through yet, but where are we at the moment? How will it impact landlords?
Well, it has already impacted landlords. As soon as the headlines hit in the media with abolition of anything, it's likely to cause a few raised eyebrows, to say the least. And this is, you know, a massive, massive change. In 30 years, we haven't had huge housing law changes. We've had additional pieces of legislation, but not fundamental to the core, where we're removing a tenancy agreement. We're removing the short hold tenancy agreement because that's the only agreement that Section 21 notices apply to. So that's got to go. We will have a series of periodic tenancies. So there's no fixed terms.
Just talk us through that. What's a periodic tenancy?
Yeah. Well, you can set one up already. That this is not new. But a periodic tenancy simply means that it will run on a period of rent. So if you set it at monthly, which unfortunately the Renters Reform Bill is going to insist on monthly rent only. So it's going to be a month by month by month periodic tenancy. Now that means currently that if you have a periodic tenancy, and we do get them because they automatically become periodic tenancies after a fixed term.
Yes. Yeah.
You get this scenario where either landlord or the tenant can give notice. at any point. They are going to extend the notice period for tenants to 2 months. They're going to have to give 2 months. At the moment, it's reasonable notice. There's nothing in statute which requires them to give any specific notice period, like the landlords who have to give two. So that's a big change for the way in which landlords handle security, because it feels like it's being removed, not given. And anything that's being removed is obviously, it feels difficult for landlords. The Section 21 notice is fundamental in the sense of that is the notice which is no fault.
So landlord changes their mind.
Yes, it sounds like landlords are just using these notices for, you know, just any reason at all, or no reason as it's set up. But in fact, we only see the bad cases in my department. You know, we're only seeing those where they've got problems, and usually it's linked to rent arrears or something similar. And, you know, landlords are struggling to make the yields meet anyway. So if they've got a tenant that's not paying as well, then things become very difficult. But they, it's made out to be something which shouldn't be used, perhaps. You know, it's not providing tenants with any confidence in taking a rental property, because at any point, it's not quite that, but at any point, the landlord could serve a notice and they could be having to move. But this has been the main change for landlords. If that's going to be removed, how are they going to get their property back? How are they going to, you know, realise their investment? If they have very specific needs, it could be their own family member. You know, perhaps a parent needs care and they need that capital funds as an injection. There could be some really, really appropriate times for the Section 21s to be used. And tenants do get notice that is going to have to happen. And often landlords will work with tenants and ensure that they are aware that they are going to have to start looking for a property. The biggest problem right now is that the rents are so high. There are so many tenants going for each and every property. And agents are under huge pressure to try and work out who to give the viewing to.
Yes. I mean, we don't know yet when the Renters Reform Bill will be introduced and in what capacity it'll come. But of course, we've got a general election to look forward to, and I'm sure that will be in people's minds as well. Gina, what would you say brokers need to think about when they're helping clients with their buy-to-let mortgages in 2024? Where should their advice be aiming towards?
I think this runs a direct parallel with what property professionals are having to tell their landlords to try and prevent them from removing themselves from the market. It's that kind of advice, really, as to what brokers should be doing. They obviously will need to know the key aspects of the bill, particularly if there are any increases in cost, because with the yields at the moment, with high housing prices, as well as high interest rates, they don't want any additional costs. So in actual fact, the biggest relief for landlords came not from the Renters Reform Bill, but when there was an announcement that the minimum energy efficiency standard was changing from level E to C. That was being scrapped. And that was the best news that could have come for landlords at that moment.
Yeah.
I don't think we're out of the woods. We have a big target as the UK and globally to get carbon emissions down. And houses are one of the worst. And that doesn't matter whether they're rented or whether we own them. So that was a relief.
And it was the uncertainty around that, because it wasn't clear.
No.
So that was relieved. A lot of landlords took a big sigh.
Indeed. But I don't think there's anything that the investment world should be scared of. I think this is a really positive step for certainly for new landlords who want to start their a business in this area.
If Emily sets them up correctly from the outset.
Absolutely. Give it my best go.
Yes. And Emily, any final thoughts from you about the year ahead and what it might look like for brokers and what they should be talking to their clients about?
I think that brokers need to know enough about the limited company route in order to educate their clients of this too. Whilst those that are in the market might have the knowledge, those that are new into the market may not. So, educating the clients of this option, but also thinking about what their longer term plans are. Because whilst you may be advising on something that's right for them now, without knowing what their longer term goals are, that might not be appropriate for them later on down the line.
Got it. Thank you, Emily. I tell you, so often I sit with people on this podcast and the real theme is knowing your clients and understanding your clients and having an ongoing relationship with them. And it's via that that you can give them advice and they can benefit from it.
Absolutely.
It's so key, communication and developing that relationship over years.
I believe that when you have a client, it's not just a one-time transaction. It's something that you continually service, whether that's every year, 2 years, 5 years. Yeah. So you need to be thinking in the longer game for these.
But of course, you've also got to go out and win new clients and then start developing that relationship really quickly.
All part of the game.
All part of the game. Well, best of luck to you both. Great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil.
That was Emily Mays of The Mortgage Stuff and Gina Peters of Dutton Gregory. The views expressed by external guests in this podcast are their opinions only and do not necessarily reflect the views of Barclays. Thanks for listening to Mortgage Insider. I'm Phil Spencer and this has been a Fresh Air production for Barclays. Please rate, review and follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.